every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise
high as the
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists. the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jaliyah. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From the past, how long can a good thing last?
Lives matter, not a hashtag. I'm not ashamed of our history because I know there is more to come. I'm not ashamed of slavery, neither bought nor sold, because I know there is another answer. I'm not ashamed of dark or light skin, straight or curly or nappy, let's call it that, hair. I'm not ashamed of thick or thin lips, nor the time we waste singing and dancing. We taught the white folks to sing and dance too. I'm proud of Simon the Cyrenian. Nobody made him help Jesus. He did his part. I'm proud of the woman who moaned on the ship at the 10th day for admitting, if not defeat, then certainly change. I'm proud of the rappers who rap, and most especially, I'm proud that Black Lives Matter. We do.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host the Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think@out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome. I am so happy to be here with you today. This is Dr. Janine James, and I'm here with our sister Dee Dee Conley, who is our co-host.
Good evening.
And it is a joy to be here today because we're going to be talking with some fantastic folks. We're going to be talking about vaccines, drugs, or nature. We've been looking forward to inviting our guests for today because there's a lot to think about as it relates to everybody talking about a vaccine, but we've been talking about drugs and management of health for some time, so we're happy to have some guests here to help us with that. I'd like to remind us of the purpose of this organization is to use African principles of truth and Kujichagulia to create a healing environment for our community. Vaccines, drugs, or nature. The Sankofa elders and our guests will discuss the role of drugs, the COVID vaccine, and holistic health measures for Blacks for our survival. Our pharmacy experts will share with us information that will allow us to survive applying the African ancestry Mayat principle of truth, the Ngugusasaba principle, Kujichagulia of self-determination. And I'll turn it over to my co-host, our co-host, Sister Dee Dee. You had some things you wanted to tell us about today.
Yes, ma'am, Dr. James, and thank you. And welcome, family. You know, I really wanted to talk about Dr. Jack Felder tonight, since Dr. James was talking about vaccines and just drugs, period. And I really wish, too, that family, please look him up and watch his videos. But anyway, we're going to talk about Brother Dr. Jack Felder. He's gone on with the ancestors now. He passed away on December the 3rd, 2017. But anyway, for many years, come rain or shine, Dr. Felder Dr. Felder, along with his son, had a permanent spot on 125th Street in front of Mark 125th. There was an array of books and other African-American artifacts, stuff that you can purchase and buy. And then he gave an interview with Brother Lamont Muhammad, and that interview was published in the Final Call in 202. There was a brief bio and scientist background on Felder. He was born in Columbia, June 14, 1939. From 1962 to 1964, he was a U.S. Army germ warfare specialist. He was a biochemistry person also. And saying that, since we're in a biochemistry warfare, I feel. But anyway, to go on about Brother Felder, he was a U.S. Army germ warfare specialist assigned to the 5th Army Regiment in Chicago. In a similar chapter from 1964 to 1966 as a civilian, he worked in a lab outside of Boston. Dr. Felder, when he was given when he was talking to the people, well, he was talking to Brother Muhammad, and he was letting him know, you know, about stuff that he did. And from 1966 to 1970, he was a research scientist and a translator. Translator at the firm in Berlin, Germany. He returned to the States in 1974, and then he began teaching science and math at a Harlem prep. Meanwhile, he continued his education, earning his doctorate degree in biochemistry from the State University of New York. And he was a very good speaker, profound writer. He published 15 books, and one of the books he published was called The Statue of Liberty to the Statue of Bigotry, 1986, and then there was something about AIDS, U.S. germ warfare at its best, with documents and proof, who really assassinated Dr. King, and who really was behind the assassination of Malcolm X. And those are some of the books that he wrote. But Dr. Felder, very, very interesting, and some very, very good documentaries. And he spoke about biochemistry warfare, and that's what we're in now with all these different vaccines and everything that they're trying to give us and promote. I was just reading something my sister sent me where Hank Aaron died, and she told me Hank Aaron was on TV. He had just 2 weeks ago took the vaccine, and now he's gone. So... and then I also heard, I also was reading too, where it said people that have compromised immune systems, you know, probably need to talk to their doctors, of course, you know, before even taking a vaccine. But how do, Dr. James, I'm going to just turn it over to you because I don't want to just, you know, keep on going on about the vaccine. And I just really wish that our brothers and sisters out there just look up Doctor, just look up Brother Felder and watch that video that he has. Please, please watch that video because he talks about even when they were giving us the polio shot back in the day, just so much stuff that they were doing to us. And they even mentioned what's in these shots. And there's proof of what's in some of these vaccines. But, you know, as I always told my children, what you don't know can kill you. So a lot of stuff we need to start researching and reading. And while we got these darn computers up before they shut them down on us, we need to start doing some type of researching. Thank you, Dr. James. I'm going to turn it over to you.
You can always find some interesting people Hello. Now, that's somebody I had not read about, and I'm so glad that you brought him to our attention.
I'm going to send you that video, Dr. James.
To make someone aware of it.
So that is just absolutely fabulous. I appreciate you giving
that
information. Well, we're very fortunate to have as guests pharmacists, and I'd like to send an invitation to our pharmacists who have joined us today, Ms. Yolanda Tolson, and we're also looking at Dr. White. And I'm just so delighted because I've had some questions, and I know that some others have some questions, and to have these Black professionals here with us is just really, really, really a treat. And I'd like to go about introducing our first guest, and that's Ms. Yolanda Tolson, who's been a Wisconsin pharmacist for 25 years. She has worked for federally qualified health centers and in commercial pharmacies like Cub Foods, Hy-Vee Foods, Walgreens. She's done some really innovative projects providing greater access for patients and customers to receive prescribed medications. She also provides consultations for patients on how to maintain their health. She has served in an academic role providing instructions to pharmacy students. Ms. Tolson, so happy to have you with us here today.
Hello, Dr. James, and all that are present on the call. I'm really delighted to actually be a part of this conversation as well. Milwaukee in particular is very dear to my heart. That's where I began my career as a pharmacist. I worked at Isaac Cogs, right in the heart of Milwaukee on 5th and Hadley at the time. That's where it was located. And I always will cherish my time there working with patients and really being a part of the community. So I'm delighted to be a part of the conversation this evening.
Well, Ms. Tolson, what are you doing today? I understand you've been working in Madison. Are you serving as a pharmacist in that setting?
Yes, I actually am currently at St. Vincent de Paul. I manage the only standalone charitable pharmacy in the state of Wisconsin. And so that means we are completely free. We provide medications to folks as well as immunizations for those that are interested, and we charge nothing for that. And in addition to the medications that we provide for folks, I like to say that we provide care with care, and we also teach students how to do the same that we work with. So we work with pharmacy students and other students that are considering pharmacy as a profession, as well as just other healthcare careers. So it's an honor to do the work that we do and also to provide, you know, insight for those that are going to be future practitioners.
Well, Ms. Tolson, how did you come across pharmacy? How did you make that decision?
Well, it's interesting because when I was in high school, one of the things that we had to do was to do a career research report. And the pharmacy just happened to be one of the professions that I researched. My father is also a physician, and he also worked in the heart of Milwaukee, close to Capitol Court. And so I did appreciate medicine and saw that up close. But I looked into pharmacy because pharmacy was a career that, at the time in particular, really was a wonderful career for women because it's something that would pay you pretty well and you could still work part-time and still have a family and kind of balance, have a good work-life balance. But I knew that going into school and in terms of considering a profession, that I wanted to do something where I would be able to help people. And I did like science, and I appreciated the work that my father did and his colleagues. So, yeah.
Well, that is so wonderful. I understand that we are underrepresented in pharmacy as we are in so many fields.
Yes.
Only about 9% of all pharmacists are black.
Actually, it's 7%.
7%?
And when I came out in the mid-90s, it was 2%. So, yes, we are definitely underrepresented.
Okay, well, we're going to have to, perhaps we'll get some people inspired from hearing you and your experience to consider pharmacy as a career. I've said to many young people, especially those who have looked to the role of selling drugs.
Oh yeah,
legally. And
I'm the legal drug dealer. Yes.
Yeah, do it legally.
That's right.
And you can dress nicely, have a nice lifestyle. You don't have to run from your competitors.
Nope.
So I don't know that we have been sharing. Perhaps, I guess, maybe some of the younger people are not ill and have not had reasons to go to the pharmacy. But I always remember the pharmacist as being so revered in the black community for their knowledge and how they would keep us healthy so we didn't have to go in to visit a physician. But they gave us such valuable information. And I'm not seeing that to the extent that I experienced as I was growing up.
And I would say that's probably more because, you know, there's been a movement away from those independent community pharmacies. Really, the commercialization of pharmacy has occurred. So that's why you've got the Walgreens and the CVS's on every corner, practically. It's actually estimated that 95% of Americans actually have, there's a pharmacy within 5 miles of every, of 95% of the American population.
So pharmacies are available,
mm-hmm.
But who are we seeing when we go to those pharmacies?
Well, actually, it's interesting because that's one of the things that we did when we were here at Access Community Health Center, which is a federally qualified health center here in Madison. That was one of the cases that we made for telepharmacy because it was an access issue. And so in spite of the fact that there are, you know, many pharmacies throughout the country, the issue still remains that people have access issues. So even if there is a pharmacy by you, if you can't afford the medication, then it might as well not be there because you won't get what you need to be well.
I see. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Paulson.
And you're welcome.
We've got some more questions that we'd like to put to you. Wanted to check to see if Dr. Sir Grice has joined us.
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Grice, we are so happy to have you join Ms. Paulson here, Dr. Grice is also a pharmacist. He trained at Concordia University, and he is currently clinical pharmacy supervisor for Advocate Aurora Healthcare. He has worked at Walgreens as a pharmacy manager, providing advice and consultations for patients and customers of his community. He also has earned a master's degree in business administration. Dr. Grice, we're happy to have you with us here today. Now, I noticed that both of you and Ms. Paulson are pharmacists, but I understand that you have a little different title in that you are referred to as a PharmD or doctorate in pharmacy. Can you share with us about why there's that distinction, and how is that a different experience?
Well, around 2000, the education system tried to expand and make pharmacy more clinical. And so they created a Doctor of Pharmacy program, which mimics almost the MD program. It's the extent of where you would do 3 years of didactic schooling and then 1 year of clinical schooling once you completed a bachelor's degree. A large majority of programs nowadays have changed to have an opportunity for a 3 year pharmacy program that's continual, which you see at the new pharmacy school at the Medical College of Wisconsin. But the idea is still similar, where we get the similar high level biochemistry, pharmacology, pharmaceutics, clinical assessments and analyses, and clinical care, to get a more robust understanding of patient care when it comes to, you know, drug management. So it's more of an academic title, but the large majority of pharmacists that are in current practice right now, no matter what the level of degree, they still have very, very similar understanding of medication management and clinical policy. So the degree just looks good because of the times, but a pharmacist from all spectrums is highly profound and highly capable of providing the level of care necessary for the patients that they are dealing with.
Well, I've been doing some reading because I was so excited about you being here today. And as I think about it, pharmacy or working with chemicals in ways to improve our health has been around a long time. What can you share with us about that history?
Well, pharmacy was a form of alchemy, we could say, but the idea of pharmacy has been around for years, been termed a lot of different things, but tons of cultures utilize some type of pharmaceutical methods. They might not call them pharmacy, but any type of remedy that was created, any type of elixir or concoction that was created in the sense of providing some level of care. The term has grown as we have grown in the Western civilization to get more evidence-based knowledge to, you know, utilize specific mechanisms of action that can do things. But the idea of pharmacy has been around from the beginning of time. That's the reason why our symbol is the mortar and pestle. Most pharmacists don't utilize the mortar and pestle anymore, but that is the real justification of what we do. Anyone familiar with the Milwaukee areas understands the value of the Dr. Carter, who was prime on his ability to compound medications. That's where he gained his knowledge and his level and importance to our society. So any opportunity to take natural raw materials and to provide them in a form that can be utilized safely for the human body is pharmacy.
Well, you use the term compounding. What does that mean?
Compounding medications comes in a sense of taking a product, a whole product. It could either be a current medication that was made by a pharmaceutical company and providing it an opportunity to get into a form that could be safely utilized by a specific patient. Not all patients can tolerate capsules or tablets. Some need the opportunity to use something IV or solution only because they don't have the ability to swallow. And compounded meds are utilized to be able to get specific med outcomes for patients who might not have the ability to use traditional forms.
That's wonderful to know. So one tablet, when you hear people tell us that they don't tolerate a medication, that it was too strong, or they didn't get the desired effects. Is this where compounding might be of use? for that type of individual?
Compounding can, depending on what the medication is. But there's also a lot of other internal things that can be a product. And we're starting to see a lot more evidence and utilization of what we call as pharmacogenetics and pharmacogenomics, where we can see how patients are breaking down things with what we call the cytochrome P450 complex in the liver. Some people break down drugs differently than others. And I mean, everybody has specific things that their body can handle. Some people don't have nausea. Some people get nausea. Some people have high pain complexes. Some don't. So be understanding how a body breaks down a medication will allow us to determine proper dosages and proper means to get adequate care where the patient is comfortable taking the medication and getting the outcomes that we're, as providers, are trying to reach.
Well, Dr. Grice, can you share with us what it is that you're doing where you're working?
Currently, I serve as the supervisor as a outpatient pharmacy connected to West Allis Memorial, where we provide discharge medication care for medical floors. We serve about four floors within the hospital and then two women's pavilion floors, so baby delivery, ICU care, NICU care, radical medical floors, the emergency room, and day surgery. And we also provide regular prescription care for patients around them in the neighborhood who feel comfortable coming to us. That is what we do. So that's what I do specifically within Aurora. Outside of that, currently I'm trying to build upon the diversity and inclusion aspects of healthcare. So I'm currently a member of the Pharmacy Society Wisconsin Diversity and Inclusion Team, where we're trying to open up and try to address some of the issues that caste and systemic racism and bigotry have impacted on our society entirely. And then I also serve on the Milwaukee Health Services Board, trying to increase and improve healthcare outcomes for our high underserved and improve health disparities within our community.
That is fascinating. While I was in medical school, we had part of our team a PharmD, and I was so appreciative of the contributions that that professional provided to the team. Often we'd have patients who would have some sort of an adverse reaction, particularly if we were managing multiple medical problems at the same time. And the PharmD was extremely helpful in providing recommendations to the team on how to provide greater effectiveness and a more tolerable experience for our patients. So having a pharmacist part of our active team was a great help. Is this something that you or Ms. Tolson are involved with, working actually in an inpatient setting?
Not as well as we want to.
Yeah, exactly right. I would say it happens much more in the inpatient settings or clinical settings. Yeah, where you might have a pharmacist actually seeing patients and actually even managing the medications and even the dosing. You know, like there's some such settings where, you know, the physicians will make the diagnosis and the pharmacist are able to pick the appropriate drug based upon all those factors that were mentioned earlier to find the right drug for the right patient.
The right drug for the right patient.
Yep. That's right.
And I don't know that most people even think about that consideration, that they're just prescribed a particular medication and we hope it's going to work. So there's probably a lot of factors that go into making that kind of a decision. Well, I know Sister Dee Dee had some really burning questions that she wanted to put to you, and I share, as well as I think others who are listening. We're doing a lot of conversation every day about the COVID vaccine. And the conversations go from, is there enough medication? Are you going to take the medicine? Who is? Who's not going to take it? And I'd like to hear from both of you. Ms. Tolson, maybe you might want to start.
Sure, I can. I'd be happy to.
What people are asking about, and what are your thoughts that you'd like to share with us about that aspect of pharmacy?
Sure. I would say it's interesting. There was an article that just was posted today from a physician, who and her name is Dr. Eugenia Self, and it was posted on NBC News. And the title of the article is that I'm a black doctor who didn't trust the COVID vaccine. Here's what changed my mind. And I would say that I would probably echo her, you know, some of her concerns. I have received my first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm scheduled for my second dose on the 27th. And I, like she, was hesitant to be one of the first to go forward, because when I was actually in pharmacy school, well, before I went to pharmacy school, I actually was in medical ethics class taught by Dr. Vanessa Gamble, and that was when I was first introduced to the Tuskegee syphilis study and was made aware of, you know, the troubling historical past of our folks with the medical community. And so, but I am a vaccinator. I've been immunizing patients for at least the last about 4 years with the flu vaccine primarily. But, and so I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I do believe that vaccines are helpful. But I was hesitant about this particular vaccine just simply because of the speed with which they've done and developed the vaccine. The vaccine technique, they're using an mRNA vaccine. It's a different vaccine than the traditional, like the influenza vaccine method. It's undergone a different method of development. And however, it's not new. But in the case of the COVID vaccine, they went through all the steps like they normally would, but they were happening concurrently instead of happening one after another. And so I was hesitant because of we just don't have the benefit of time to know, you know, the long-term effects and the troubles that the vaccine could potentially cause. But having said all of that, I did ultimately decide to get it because I am going to be vaccinating folks that are interested in receiving the vaccine. And I do not believe that I should be vaccinating folks if I don't take it myself. And also, I am a part of the state disaster medical advisory committee that's advising the Department of Health, DHS, on the distribution of the vaccine. So I do know that lots of care has been considered to make sure that the vaccine is going to be distributed in an equitable fashion. And furthermore, in the development of the vaccine, there have been black researchers, scientists, and physicians involved throughout the entire process. Dr. Kizzy, let me get her name, helped develop the Moderna vaccine. Kizmikia Corbett. She helped to develop the Moderna vaccine, which are there's the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine are the two that are currently available. And then the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson will soon be next. I guess I don't know. I'll stop with that.
Well, that's interesting to hear your thoughts on it. I'm probably, even as a health professional, if one were to ask me, I would tell them to ask the questions that they have to ask. But if they ask me, have I taken the vaccine, the answer to the question for me is no. And I think I've decided to allow those people who want to get it first, and then I'm going to see how you do.
Exactly.
And
that's how I was feeling too. I really was.
I'm going to be in that arm, and I'm okay with not being able to go to the restaurants and not to travel. And I stayed away from my loved ones. But I'm really troubled about this, which has come out so quickly. We've not, that I can recall in recent memory, that any product of this type has come out this quickly to allow time to observe and be published in a peer review journal where people are able to analyze the data. This is just very unfamiliar. And I really am having a problem as I see various individuals who are coming on television and are in our podcast, and they're saying that this vaccine is safe. And I think that that's a stretch. I think we'd like to say we believe it's safe. We believe that it's going to be okay. But do we really know what we're saying? And that is troubling, especially when we're seeing, hearing different, at one point we're seeing there's a vaccine for that you take one dose and repeat the dose in 2 weeks, and then you're coming up with another vaccine that doesn't require that. And I just think that all of this can't help but be very confusing. And so that has been my position. But I'm willing to tell one how to go about getting the vaccine and some of the questions that they might ask. But personally, I'm not going to be there. And interestingly, a number of the health professionals that I know have said the same thing, except those that are in the trenches, I guess you might say, who are actively seeing patients on a daily basis. And they feel that this probably, even if there's some risk involved, they're willing to take that risk. Dr. Grice, what can you share with it? What are your thoughts about this for our audience?
Well, I will say I was just like everyone else. Initially, I did think the timeline was too quick. So I was questioning some stuff. The majority of it was I didn't believe that there would be enough coverage for enough time, because we were seeing that patients impacted by COVID could get it again within 4 to 5 months. Even if you had it, your antibodies weren't lasting long enough to sustain immunity. So my worry was, what was the plan of action for that? Reading up on both of them, seeing that there was a plan to justify that concept, I got more comfortable with the idea. This idea of utilizing an mRNA vaccine has been in discussions for a good 8 to 10 years going on now. There's been some documentation of these ideas being used. They just have not been forward and utilized currently. This is the first of the situation. And also, what people don't realize is it's very, very, very expensive to bring a drug product to the market. And that money is more or less the issue than it is actually timing. A lot of small places create medications or improve drugs real quick, but because it costs so much to get legality and safety coverage behind it, it takes much longer than it logistically would in some cases. So I initially, because I am somebody who is on the front line and don't believe that it'd be beneficial for me not to be able to serve my people, got my first vaccine shot on the 31st. And I got the Moderna vaccine, so I get my second dose on the 28th. And similar to a large majority of people, the side effects that I impacted weren't much. But I'm also younger, and so thank God I have a little bit more robust immune system. I do respect the idea that people are worried about this vaccine coming in at the rapid pace that it did. And to those folks, if you have the opportunity to safely distance yourself from life, do what is best for your agenda. But a large majority of people, because they don't have the opportunity to financially distance themselves or logically distance themselves, it's best to be as prepared as possible to decrease the chance of transmission to those that you care about. And so that was why I've ultimately decided to get vaccinated.
So that's very interesting to share that with us. Well, Dr. Grice, Ms. Tolson, it's time for us to acknowledge our sponsor, which is eDoc Advice. It's a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. www.edocadvice.com. We do not replace your health professional or provide your care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. eDoc Advice. So we are happy to have in our midst Dr. Sir Grice, and we also have Ms. Shalonda Tolson, who are both pharmacists in Wisconsin, and we are so appreciative that they're here with us today and will allow us to share what our additional concerns are and questions. And we're going to be going to our top of the hour. And in that next segment, we're going to look forward to your questions and comments that you might have about vaccines, about drugs, as well as natural ways that you might wonder that may help you staying healthy.
When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds.
Train a coming. You don't need no baggage. You just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord. Train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key. Open the doors and board them. There's hope for all among us love the most.
Time for an awakening media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambom and Sister Nataki Kambom. 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. Conversation Reparation, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones. Oniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturday, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sunday, 7 p.m., 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out, get informed, and get informed.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host The Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com. access the search portal and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Well, thank you. We're glad to have our guest here today with us, joining the Sankofa Council, and we're discussing with our two guests, Dr. Sir Grice and Ms. Yolanda Tolson, who are pharmacists, and we're discussing vaccines, drugs, or nature. And for those who have comments or questions, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. I think we have some callers here. I'm looking at 919-641. Do you have a call, question or comment for us?
Just listening right now, sister.
All right. Thank you for calling. 919-724. 919-724.
Hi, yes, I'm just listening in. Thank you.
Thank you. 414-364. 414-364. Well, thank you. This gives me an opportunity to ask a burning question. I served as the chief medical officer for a federally qualified health center. In fact, I've done so in Milwaukee and Chicago. And in doing so, I learned about one of the, what I consider the best kept secrets related to medications. And it's called the 340B Drug Pricing Program. This is a program that, as I understand it, is a U.S. federal governmental program that's been created in 1992 that requires the drug manufacturers to provide outpatient drugs to patients who come to a federally qualified health center. I've been on the phone most of this week trying to get a very needed medication that I take, and I've had a real difficult time, but fortunately, I am a patient at a federally qualified health center, and this medication costs $600 for a month's supply, just 1 month, $600. I called around a little bit more and found I had a $200 copay, and eventually I was able to acquire the medication that I need for $17 as a patient as a federally qualified health center. And I just think this is the best news possible, and I tell all my family and my friends about being a patient at a federally qualified health center so that you have the benefit of this greatly discounted program. Ms. Tolson, I believe you've worked in federally qualified health centers, and one that I worked for. Share with us a little more information about this program.
Yes, as you mentioned, it is a program that was developed in the 90s. To provide basically a drug benefit for folks that are part of what they call a covered entity, and of which federally qualified health centers are one. There are some hospitals that have that designation as well. The federal government determines what they call MUAs, or medically underserved areas and medically underserved populations. And so based upon the folks that have a higher need for care,
They make allowances for these federally qualified health centers, as well as other covered entities, to provide medications to patients at a lower cost. So they get a discount on the cost of the medications, but the program, the idea of the program, the discount, is to actually allow for the covered entities to really expand their programming and help more people. So usually that savings does go down to the patient, but it doesn't always. But in terms of the federal qualified health centers with the pharmacies, the prices can be as low as pennies per tablet or per gram of medication, and the price varies and the prices are set with the manufacturers and the federal government. So generally there is a sliding scale. They look at, so patients have to be screened by the federally the provider of care to determine their financial need, and then their pricing is adjusted accordingly for the medication. Now, all drug companies do have some type of indigent patient program as well, and they typically are for folks that do not have insurance. Yes, they don't have insurance. But they do make some allowances for folks that do have insurance and then that may have like a Part D plan, but may be in the donut hole where their benefit will kick in and they will help. So I have a lot of resources that I can share that I can pass on. I don't know if you have a website, but for those that are interested, there's a lot of information that we can share.
Well, we do have an email address for our listeners, and which is Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. So if you have any questions that you'd like to put through to us, and we will certainly get in touch with Ms. Tolson to help in answering those questions. I just think it's the greatest thing around. I have a friend who has a medication that costs $2,000 a month, and she basically just could not take the medication, not at that cost. But after having become a patient at the Federally Qualified Health Center, she's able to get that same medication for $50. So for $50 is just amazing to me. I don't quite understand what the process is that allows that to happen, but I know that I'm just happy that I don't have to pay that amount and that the people I've told love it. And I think that many people think that they may not be eligible to go to a federally qualified health center, particularly if they have insurance or they have Medicare. But anybody can be a patient at the federally qualified health center, and they can see very qualified physicians, medical mid-level providers such as physician's assistants and nurse practitioners. They can get their lab work done. They can have some x-ray studies done, in addition to the variety of services, which includes pharmacy, which includes mental health services. It's just all there, and it's right there in your community. And every community has, if not one, depending on the size of the community, but could have multiple federally qualified health centers. And you don't have to give up. If you have an established doctor that you've had for many years, you could still see your established doctor. Well, this is an opportunity. You have two doctors, and one is at the federally qualified health center. So you have to be a patient at the Federally Qualified Health Center in order to be eligible for this drug pricing program your doctor can't call the prescription into their pharmacy. But if you are signed up and are seeing one of their providers, and you ask that your prescriptions all be called into that pharmacy, and that makes sense that you go to one place rather than to multiple places to have your prescription filled. So I'm so happy to get to share that information with our listeners, because I just think that is, again, the best kept secret around. Thank you. And I'm also delighted to allow us some opportunity. I know that Dr. Grice has some interest in a non-medication approach to health, that while this is something that is his profession and he has an expertise in these pharmaceutical agents, but I think we have probably a number of listeners who are interested in what people refer to as natural methods of staying healthy. Dr. Grice, what would you like to share with our audience about that concept?
Well, the amazing thing about healthcare in general is if patients can and are willing to follow the simple guidelines that we all tell them of a natural diet, exercise, and good sleep, a large majority of the health issues that we work on wouldn't actually per se exist to an extent. I personally believe that as a Christian individual, that God has created us already perfectly in its sense, and, you know, making sure that we take the best opportunities to take care of our bodies was the best means to actually providing good care. There are, of course, certain circumstances that force us to be in positions where medication is a necessity. And when you are dealing with those scenarios as a patient, it's best to be very vocal in asking a lot of questions and making sure that your questions are answered to determine what is the best means of care for you. But for a majority of circumstances, there are better means than medication to go to as a first-line resort. I'll give an excellent example. Blood pressure for a large majority of patients can be defined and fluctuates consistently based off the definition. It's a dynamic concept. So today your blood pressure might be 140 over 80, which is termed through a lot of sources as being hypertensive or having high blood pressure, with the goal of being 120 over 80. And because that rating was what was determined within the office, the provider might believe it's necessary for medication to be placed on board. There's a lot of ideas that present themselves with the idea of what we call as white coat syndrome, where patients naturally get anxious in that moment and their blood pressure spikes, and thus we're not getting a good gauge of what their actual consistent blood pressure is. And so there might not actually be need for medication at that point. Secondary, there's times where a medication can be placed on board, a patient can have the medication, but they don't actually pick up the medication or take it, and thus then we're getting skewed ideas of what the patient's platform looks like. So there's times where medication might have been placed on board, the patient never took it or only taken sporadically, and then the provider increases the dose or adds on another medication because they're not seeing the goal results that they're trying to reach. So a large majority of healthcare is based off of, you know, planned algorithms or patterns that we learn based off of the masses from evidence to see what a patient with certain numbers presents as. Sometimes being able to speak up and have a very good relationship with your provider to have an honest dialogue can definitely decrease a lot of onboard medication. So That's one thing. Diabetes is another thing. While on my rotations, I was fortunate to work at Milwaukee Health Services, and we provided diabetic care for a lot of patients. And in a six-week time span, we saw dramatic decreases in patients' A1C, which is a marker that we utilize to determine a three-month rating of how much sugar is attached to patients' blood cells that is free-flowing in the blood. And once you saw some of these numbers with just simple changes in diet, decreasing in the quantity of sodas or adding a little bit of exercise, those values dramatically dropped without even having to add specific medications on board or increasing any meds on board. So medication is a necessary evil with certain disease states, but with a large majority of them, with proper dietary use, proper exercise, proper sleep, decreasing stress, which are sadly being of African descent or what we call it, an African descent of slave, you will automatically have certain levels of stress that is naturally put on your aura just for a living. So it's understood, but those things can be reduced just by focusing in on certain levels of care.
You should work out. He's a medical.
Well, thank you, Dr. Christ. I'd like to find out if we have a comment from call 919-998. And we do have a question about natural remedies for sinuses. So those individuals that are experiencing sinus congestion, drainage, perhaps cough from sinus, are there some things that one might attempt to do that could help with that kind of problem?
I would start with saline. Saline. The neti pot, the salt, you can make your own saline solution with salt and water and just kind of doing a nasal rinse to help clear some of the congestion that can develop in your nasal passages.
Could I have a...
And you were going to say some other things? So the neti pot can help. What would be contributing to sinus problems? Are there irritants in the air that are serving to aggravate that type of a problem? Dust playing a role? Are there medications or other conditions that might contribute to sinus problems?
I mean, sinus issues can be caused by a couple of things. That's why, you know, the first thing is to rinse out that sinus cavity in that airspace without having to use anything. So you would preferably want to not use medication. Sadly, there's some over-the-counter medications that we can cause worsening sinus problems.
Yeah,
so sometimes with too much use of medication, we can make things worse. Pretty much your body gets what we call a used to that need of it. And so by taking it, if you take it for longer than 2 or 3 days, then your body now feels the need of having it, almost like a withdrawal type symptom situation. So that can cause increased sinus problems as well. Sinus problems can deal with a lot of things depending on where you live. Change in temperatures, change in climate, filtration of your air at home. So use of a humidifier, simple things like Vicks can help just to clean out those airways for the time being. The uses of Kleenex and tissues, what we're using. So sometimes just simple things like a rinse and some Vaseline go a long way. A lot of the old school remedies that our grandmamas used took care of a lot of the issues that can be very beneficial. So
that's right.
A lot of stuff, when it comes to simple things, it's treating that first and then also being patient. But when you do present to a pharmacist or a doctor, it's good to be open with letting them know what all you have tried or haven't tried, because there are some things that could present themselves that could make things worse that you could be doing over the counter. So always being open to those conversational pieces is best to go from there.
Yeah.
But can I also interject and just say that sometimes when we are dealing with our sinuses, this is Nan Tyree in Potomac, Maryland, and I wanted to say that sometimes we have to watch our diet. That's very important, because be careful about the salt and the sugar and white flour and meats and eggs, because they can be dairy products. They're a mucus producing.
Yes.
So if we do some preventive things at first, that certainly could help a whole lot. Then, of course, I do think with supplementing with, like, vitamins A, C, and D could also help. But I think we should be very mindful of what we are putting in our bodies first and foremost, including our diet.
Now, could I ask a question?
Yes.
Yes, I'd like to know, in turn back to the COVID, what are some of the things that people are saying who are saying that the black community should not be so gung-ho or ready or quick to take the COVID vaccine? And I'm asking because I really don't know, and I need to do a little reading on it myself, but I do know that Minister Farrakhan and Wesley Muhammad, and there was a Zoom meeting that was held about it. But what are some of the reasons that some people who say do not take it are saying do not take it? Do you have anybody on your any of the two panelists or anybody in your listening audience who can call in to answer that question for me, please?
I think there's just a general mistrust of the medical community for many valid reasons. And some people, there's conspiracy theorists that think, you know, it may be intentional to try to do us harm.
I think it also has a lot to do with distrust.
Exactly.
Right, yeah, I heard some of that too. But I was wondering if there any more specifics other than this. You know, I know about distrust and of course, the history of the medical community, medical profession, we know about that. But are there any specific kinds of things that the people who are saying be cautious and do not take this virus are saying as to why we should not take it? That's kind of where I'm coming from. Is there anybody who might would be able to answer that?
I can speak to that from this perspective. When COVID first was announced a year ago, and I came out publicly to say that I felt that this was going to be a particular problem for black people, not only becoming infected, but also dying from it. And the reason I made that statement really reflects an understanding of history. And the history is that if whatever medical disorder that we've identified, there has been demonstrated a what is referred to disparity between one group and another in terms of who does the worst having that particular disorder. And we're becoming aware, those of us who are health professionals have known it, we've not necessarily known what to call it, but the racism as it relates to how decision-making takes place for us. And we often are not doing as well. And all of the explanations that are given are typically one that I guess you'd call blame the victim, that we have a problem because we don't have the education, or we don't have the access to care, or we're not as conscientious about following advice. But we've seen, even during this COVID period, some of the discrepancies in information that's being provided. Like, if you think you might have a COVID infection, don't come to the hospital. Well, you've got to know something about the group of people you're taking care of. When we think about coming to a hospital, we're pretty sick. And we've been sick for a while. And what that has led for some of us, we stay at home too long, and we are very sick, and then it's hard to reverse that situation, even within the healthcare system. So I think that what I don't think that anyone can identify specific factors as to why we're telling people to be cautious, except that our experience has been that we have not received the best advice, the best care, the timeliness of care, and for that reason, it just has been one that we're telling people, be cautious, because you don't know that, and for a good part of this, nobody has really studied to a great extent how we tolerate certain treatments, how we do. And so when we're being told that things are normal or are safe for us, that really hasn't been researched. And so if you understand that nobody really knows a whole bunch, as you might think, as it relates to taking care of us, therefore we're just simply saying be cautious. And ask the question. You may need to, in how many black patients were treated and at what age, and before you listen to and hear the kinds of things that make you feel comfortable in your decision.
Beautiful. Hello, Jean?
Yes.
This is Pat McManus.
Yes, Dr. McManus.
Oh, you mind if I comment on this?
Please do.
Please comment, Dr. McMahon. Please do.
Yes,
yeah, thank you,
Dr. I've been conducting, I got a grant from the state, and I've been conducting educational sessions for the black community around this whole issue in terms of having people have the right information to make a decision whether they want to get the vaccine or not. And one of the things that that is clearly there that people are looking at is the health of African Americans, and I think you kind of alluded to this, Dr. James, in terms of what you've been saying. Over, you know, we're looking at you know, over decades, four decades of mistreatment being here, and there are some research that comes out that has been that one because I try to research as much as I can when I do that kind of training, and they're doing some research in Ohio, in Georgia rather, that they've actually been following black families for 25 years and have just started putting out some preliminary data that talks about the fact that black people do not live as long, and we're not as healthy, even if we live long, we're not as healthy because of the stress related to how we're treated there. You know, that the whole discussion around epigenetics, there's a whole new science around epigenetics that talks about how the genes actually begin to act differently, and they're looking at populations that have been mistreated over time. So it becomes more difficult if people really want to look at it to say, now when we do a vaccine and we do something like this with folks, how is that going to affect different populations who may have, for lack of a better term, weakened immune systems in the first place?
especially when something like this goes and attacks the immune system. And it's not saying that people, that they did that to us directly. It's more benign neglect is what I like to call it, because they don't look, they still don't want to admit that going through slavery and going through all the stuff we've gone through being here has not affected us as a people. And that's really not true, but they don't know what to do really about it. Now, we don't, I made it very clear to the state when I took the grant that I wasn't going to take the grant to tell people that they just should take the vaccine, but I wasn't going to tell them not to take it either. Our job is to make sure that they have the information they need to make a solid decision, which many times we don't. A lot of times they don't even tell a lot of black people what's going on, because they just make the assumption they won't know what's going on with it anyway. But there's still a lot of research coming in. Somebody mentioned those new strands of the virus that come in through. One of them came in through Colorado, and a couple of them came through, I know, around Florida or someplace. But now they're not sure they do say that these strands of viruses they're more infectious, but they at this point they can't tell whether they're more deadly. They seem to be less, but they don't know. And it keeps coming up, especially if you got a system like ours, and then have things going in and out. They're not sure now whether this vaccine will affect that or not. It would be effective anyway. They're trying to figure it out more or less. And it's hard then for people to make, and then talking about how we're treated in the healthcare system. I think I mentioned before, I think, Janine, we were talking about the doctor that died of COVID in the hospital, and she was talking about how she was, she kept talking about how she was treated. Other people saw that on Facebook. She told her story on Facebook, Dr. Brown. And I sat and looked at that because I thought, my goodness, that stuff is just still, I mean, even with everything else going on, I mean, we still get treated like second, third class citizens. I don't care how many doctorates you got. I don't care what you have. Mm-hmm. You still get treated that way, and that affects our immune system, which then affects our ability to withstand diseases like this. So I don't want to talk too much, but I thought I'd throw that in.
No, but go ahead. That's sounding good. And I'm glad you mentioned, because I did. I mean, I'm glad you called in too, because I wanted to hear from somebody as to what some specifics as to why several people in the black community who have somewhat influence are saying do not take the virus. And so I was glad to hear something from another medical person to kind of make that clear.
Right, at least to understand why did you take it. Like I said, I'm not telling people not to take it, but I'm not telling them to take it.
But you know, there are some members in the black community who are saying do not take it. You know what I mean? Just straight out. Just like, right. And then that's... Mm-hmm.
May I ask a question?
That's what it's related to, having a distrust of the medical system in the first place, let alone when something like that happens. And then we're treated like, beyond secondhand sin. I mean, many healthcare providers, well, that's just silly. And so they just want to dismiss it rather than taking the time to talk to people, to listen to them explaining what happened all the way back to Tuskegee. Because I tell folks, look, I mean, having doctors and, I mean, they want to get black doctors and black nurses and everybody else to get up there and tell them, that they should be able to do it. And I certainly am telling people not to do that. But you still need to recognize what people have gone through and what they're still going through in this country, that they may not trust the system. Because like I said, you try to go to an emergency room now and half the time they send you home or they make some type of racist comment or they see whoever you are or whatever. But now you're supposed to turn around and believe that they want to do this for you.
That's interesting.
You just got to, it really is something, especially Milwaukee. I mean, when they talk about Milwaukee being one of the worst places in the world to raise black children, these are the things we're talking about, this kind of thing, kind of attitude that they tend to have, And like I said, then if you raise a question, they want to dismiss you as, you're just kind of ignorant or you don't understand what's going on. They may not be able to articulate it in language, that people have, but people, you have a sense about that. We've always been able to feel how people feel about us, you know. And for that reason, that makes it very, we tend to hesitate sometimes in believing what's going on, you know, or trusting what they say, that you do need somebody that they trust to say something. But I'll just tell you this, and I'll get off, is that I might have mentioned this before, I think, Jenny, we were talking, but I don't know, did anybody see Dionne Warwick when she was on TV? That was about maybe 3 weeks or a month ago now, but she was on MSNBC. I tend to watch MSNBC and most of all the rest of them. And so she was on there, though, talking about, I guess she's doing a special program now with some of the rappers and some people on Twitter. And I mean, she's 80 now. She looks great. But anyway, just as they were going to close up, the last question they asked, the moderator asked her was she going to get, or had she gotten the vaccine shot? And so she told him no. And he said, well, are you going to get it? And she said she didn't know whether she was good or not. And so then he was asked her, he said, but the black doctors and the black, everybody is saying it's okay. And she said, I understand that, but I'm just going to take some time. I mean, he, for about another 5 minutes, it was just astounding to him that she just wouldn't do it. But she didn't say she wasn't going to do it. But it seemed like he needed her to say that she was going to do it. I guess, again, if you look at somebody you trust, when you trust somebody like that, he's going to tell you exactly how they feel about it. I just thought it was so, we got to be careful sometimes about going because out and just assuming that people are going to.
They know she could influence a lot of other people. That's what it is, right?
Right.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But that's why she didn't tell anybody not to take it. She was just real clear that she's going to wait and see, because that's kind of like where I am, you know, that she's going to wait and see. But what was really strange, like I said, I watch MSNBC every day practically. And they, when they got somebody of her stature on there, they used to do clips of it, and you know, it's on different programs and stuff. You didn't hear another thing from, you know, they didn't even show the part when she was there. I was like, wow, they just shut her down. I bet they changed. They probably ask people now before they come on, are you gonna, you know, we're gonna ask you about taking the vaccine and stuff, and probably, and I'm assuming, make a difference on whether they have you, or at least don't sit there and ask the question if you don't know the answer.
She didn't do what she's supposed to do.
No, she didn't.
I was wondering in comparison with back in the day, I was very small, and I remember, I think it was the smallpox, and how people, you know, were somewhat hesitant about going for this. I guess it was the smallpox. No, it was polio. Because I remember my parents taking me, and I was to this school, and I was in line with lots of other people and received this little sugar cube with a pink drop one. And so I think I was very young, but I do remember that. And I remember my parents having a big conversation about whether or not, you know, these children should be getting this polio. But, of course, I got the sugar cube, you know, so it's something. I was very young, but I remember that. And I remember the black community being hesitant about going to get this sugar cube with this pink drop of medication on it. So I guess this COVID thing reminds me of that. So I guess you have to, like, do your own soul searching and decide what you want to do.
Exactly.
You try to research,
you know, information as you can, and you got to make, you know, you just have to make your own decision. They had mentioned too, I remember now whether I was listening to it on TV or whatever, but they were showing a case, I guess, he was like 86 years old and barely decent health or whatever, but still had a relative that was being his custodian, couldn't take care of himself anymore, and apparently she was hesitant about him getting the vaccine, and some of the members of the rest of the family felt he should get it. And so I guess she gave in and he got the vaccine, and then he died 5 days later. Now, it may not mean, you know, it doesn't mean that the vaccine actually caused it, but you don't know. But I felt so sorry for the woman, because I know, you know, probably, you know, long time she's going to blame herself for giving in on some sense of her,
was it?
That said, that said don't do it, you know.
Well, that happened to his parents just this week. No,
Hank Aaron took 36 years old.
Yeah, did you see that?
Exactly.
Hank Aaron took it, and 2 weeks later he died. And he was on TV. But what amazes me is how they use other black people to lead other black people to the slaughter. It's the same game, but it's just under a new name. It's a new name. You know, they think, you know, just like when I was reading the article about Hank Aaron, and they were saying, you know, how he took the shot, and then they let a black nurse give it to him. They feel like we as black people, they think we just so just idiotic, I guess, if we see the black person giving it and the black person doing it, then we're going to stick our arm out or stick our butt up or whatever. You know, it's just sad. It's sad.
Well, that's what Dionne Warwick was saying. I mean, because the guy was saying, the moderator, he was like, But black doctors and black nurses, they're saying it's okay. And she would just say, yes, I do understand.
That's their job.
One of the things,
can I ask a question, please?
Please do so.
Okay. With the and I really appreciate all the conversation that's going around the COVID, because I've had questions for a while. What I feel, doing my due diligence and, you know, making sure I'm taking care of my health during this time is, especially around the COVID, what is a good source for African Americans to monitor the results from the testing and the vaccines and getting updates, and something that might even show us what's the differences between the vaccines that are out there, so that one could say, based on my health, you know, this type of drug, this type of thing may not work well for me, you know, so that we can make informed as well as a spiritual decision while it's a decision, because I'm thinking pretty soon it's not going to be a decision. It's going to be a forced situation. But it might even, you know, having a source that can help me understand what's really going on as it relates to African American health, and how, you know, what do I need to know so I can make a decision, even if it means I can pick between three or four vaccines that may be available.
Well, I think you can come to our programming. There may be some programs like Dr. McManus has with her Black Health Coalition of Wisconsin. That we're going, if there's something that is a major point, we're going to come out and we're going to talk with you about it, and we're going to be candid about it with you. We're not going to just tell you what the health community is saying, because we've worked in this area. I've worked in here 40 years. And I've observed quite a bit over this time. And unfortunately, as I've gotten older, I have developed some of the disorders that come about with age or other problems. And I have bought into a system that has let me down, even as a health professional. And in ways that were preventable. And it simply boiled down to people not really being concerned enough about me that they allowed me to become injured. And I'm very, I don't mind being very vocal about that point, but I listen very carefully to patients as they express their concerns, and I'm going to be very open when they ask us a question about what are your values, what is important to you, what can you expect within the system that we have. Some things are better to leave alone and to rely on, as we say, some of these more natural measures. Now, even as a licensed and boarded physician, I've been sending messages out to my family and friends, what I call my COVID fighting recipes. And over this time, I've done a little more reading than I have had time to do before. And so I have some soups that I make up. And basically, it's probably just increasing the water that I never had time to do before and pay attention, adding some seasonings that have been known to be helpful, like turmeric and cumin, garlic, other inflammatory types of foods. What my goal is to make sure that my immune system is as strong as possible, because the body will naturally fight whatever infection there is if the immune system is strong. So getting proper rest is so valuable, which many times we don't take the time to do, but COVID, in my mind, has allowed us time to have more rest than I would have ordinarily had. And this is the recommendation that I've given to my family and friends, and we've done pretty good over this year in terms of the people who've become infected, and we've not lost anybody in my group. But this is an approach that I've taken, not a medication, but more rest, more water, and increasing the foods that we've known to have less of an inflammatory effect.
I appreciate that, Dr. James. What about the, is it the pharmacists that are on the line that have taken the vaccine? What sources would you suggest to follow before taking the vaccines? I came in a little bit late in the call, but maybe you've mentioned the different vaccines and what they contain, and where would I have a source to follow the results of that before it becomes immediate for me.
I think you can get information about the prevalence on the CDC's website, also DHS within the state. Do weekly and daily updates, actually, about the activity of the vaccine, the disease, as well as the vaccine activity in the community. So those are always two good places to start.
And do they?
Well, you know, one of the other places. I was going to say that they don't actually. It's kind of interesting because I've been, as I mentioned, because I've been doing these educational sessions, I've been digging into a lot of this to try to figure it out. And I think because the way it came, because we had the business president up until last Wednesday, thank God.
Sure.
that it even started that way. It didn't. You know, he dealt with it from strictly a business standpoint. And actually, a lot of these, whether it's Pfizer or whether it's AstraZeneca or what is it? The other ones,
Moderna.
Right. Well, you know that they don't even talk to each other because it's really about business. If it was done the way have been initially, the government would have had them all in at the same time and not deal as competitors. So that's why it's hard to find anything where, you can read about all of them separately, but there isn't anything that I've been able to find anyway that when they look at them together and say, given all this or these all work well here, they keep talking about how the different ones, because they have the issues that some have to be refrigerated so much and some have to have some of the other issues. AstraZeneca is getting ready to come out. The first three all have, you have to have two doses, but Johnson & Johnson is the one that you don't have to have the two doses. But then they begin to raise the issue of the efficacy of it, rather than because it's only like 60% versus 70%,
right.
That kind of thing. It kind of goes back and forth how they do it. So I'm just saying it's not one you can fight.
I would definitely agree. Yeah.
But it's not all together where it gives you a sense that you can make a really good decision because they kind of all say the same thing. They kind of decide what they're going to put on there and what they're not. I think they're hiding some things that they don't put out. Be really
honest. I would agree with that, but I would just say that the prevalence.
And then if a person has COVID-19, will this vaccine heal them or keep healing and recovery?
They don't have all that information yet. That's the problem. Everything is happening so rapidly that we're learning as we go. And in fact, really, those of us who have gotten the vaccine, we are kind of participating in a trial, too, because they just don't have the time. The benefit of time, like you normally would have, to get the data to be able to define and describe what's really happening.
Thank you. I'm trying to get my questions in because I don't get an opportunity to do this often, and I really appreciate your time and your experience. Are there those that have tested for positive for COVID-19? Do they get symptoms? Do they get sick? Is everybody that's tested positive, do they get sick?
No. Everybody who is tested positive does not get sick. That's the definition of asymptomatic. So when you hear that term asymptomatic, they are walking around positive, but they don't have symptoms. And so
about 30% of them they're saying does that, you know.
And that's a good reason. That's the main reason why I got the vaccine as a younger person. It's not the fact of being fearful of my own personal health, but because I have family who are older. COVID is the big issue with COVID is a blood issue. COVID looks like the flu, and it causes, we were fearful of the breathing. But what people are dying from is heart attack and stroke, which black folks in generally have high blood pressure, diabetic, all blood issues. As a black man, if I'm hanging around black people and I'm trying to provide care, I need to make sure I'm not the reason they're getting COVID. So did COVID kill an 86-year-old man who was blessed to hit all the home runs in the world? That's a high possibility. But is the chances of it killing me, a 35-year-old? Not as much. But is it the chance of me, the 35-year-old, going to see my 86-year-old grandparent killing them? Yes, that is. Right. So those are the things that you really have to worry about with this vaccine. The vaccine's data and analysis, no one has. You're never going to get an answer that's going to be justifiable. What you do need to do is have a trustworthy healthcare provider. If there's somebody you trust, you need to talk to them. Open up your phone, pick up the phone, and they'll give you honest-to-goodness information. What we do a lot of in our community, sadly, is we think we got guinea pigs who are speaking for the man's behalf, and we saying this for what it is, but we got to realize everybody's an individual, and they have their own personal beliefs. And so when you look at the information, you have to take it from a spiritual basis and understand, is it best for you? And if you have a question that's presented, you need to then ask that to somebody you trust in that field. All of us are going to tell you as black folks, we can legitimately not trust anything living on this earth. We got 400 years of evidence to prove why not. So that as a definition is fact, but we can't use that as an excuse not to be knowledgeable on the topic. And take it as an individual and see where we need to be for our care. So none of us have the direct answer, but the initial gauge of it all is to realize that none of this stuff is foolproof and 100%. None of this stuff is going to be something that's going to change overnight. And with or without the vaccine, if you are not taking proper normal health precautions that we discussed, getting your rest, washing your hands, eating a good food, you are still going to be putting yourself in danger to getting this virus. And if this virus gets you, you are sadly underserved, have high disparities, have multiple health conditions like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, all things that directly impact the black community. We are highly at fault for dying. And that's the thing that I want us to not be dealing with is the death aspect. The longer we live, the more opportunity we have to impact a greater populace and to improve all the issues that we're dealing with. So that's the concepts of what we can utilize now. There's no direct answer, but there are people out here that you can trust. As Janine said, go to those that you trust and get an honest answer.
and hopefully that can lead you in the right direction.
Well, we'd like to.
Oh, I appreciate that. One final question. One final question. What is it going to cost?
There will be no charge. There is no charge.
No charge?
No charge for the vaccine.
Mm. Okay, oh, yeah, no. No charge.
Or testing? No charge for testing.
The testing is also available for free unless you want to do the antibody testing. There is a charge typically for that.
What about the antibody?
Antibody testing that demonstrates whether your body has had has been exposed to the COVID this virus. That there typically is a chart. They can charge for that. But
okay, well, folks, I got this to off at this point. I'd like to thank everybody for joining in with us today, and I thank all of the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing your vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives. Remember, our email address is sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. Thank you, Dr. Sir Grice, Dr. Pat McManus. We appreciate your input, as we do all of our listeners, and we look forward to talking with you next time.
Thank you,
Dr. McManus. Thank you,
everybody. Be blessed.
You too.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now.